kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
I don't really have any news that we could talk about, so I'll basically just be like, do some quick reviews and then throw to the N++ interview that I did.
That should be interesting to hear. I'll have to watch the show.
Well, yeah, you will. You'll have to watch the show that you're on.
Because I hate myself, so I'll skip my part.
It's okay. We hate you too.
Oh, thanks. I feel so good.
I guess I should probably start this, huh?
Probably.
Oh, what's up, everyone? This is Joe. This is SML Podcast number 217. This is going to be a little quick one today before heading into an interview. No Chris, but instead I am joined by frequent contributor to the show, CJ Greenwood. CJ, how are you?
I'm good, and I like that intro.
How's it feel to be on the show now? You're not just writing stuff. You're actually talking on it.
I feel incredible. This is definitely an honor.
No, it's not. It's really not.
Whatever.
I actually feel bad for you because now I'm going to like expect things of you.
Oh God, no, don't do this.
Like you're going to have to like talk.
I'm just going to have to leave this call.
Yeah. So, let's kick things off with a bit of show news. Some people may have seen on our Facebook and on our Twitter, but we actually started up a GoFundMe for this show. A lot of people have been asking me if we are going to be covering any kind of VR technology or the PlayStation VR, stuff like that. And I figured, you know what? If people want this to happen, I can't do it by myself because those things are expensive. So I've put the call out to you, our audience, the people listening. I have created a GoFundMe to help this show afford a PlayStation VR. Our GoFundMe, you could find it at GoFundMe.com/PSVR4SML. So PSVR for SML. Pretty self-explanatory.
I'm assuming you'll also put it in the description. So
of course, the link will be below whatever you're checking this out on. So wherever you see our usual links, it'll be there. And if you're having that hard of a time finding it, just check our Twitter because I pinned it. And I'm sure I'll be tweeting about it frequently. So far, we've only had two people chip in, but it just goes to show how dedicated our listeners are. We had an anonymous donation of $100 for our very first donation.
Oh my God.
And they wanted to remain anonymous, so they're no problem. I will keep them unknown and unnamed. I appreciate them. They know who they are. They know what they did. And I thank them from the bottom of my heart. And then, not to be outdone, friend of the show, No Pulse, has chipped in $125.
Damn, No Pulse. Yeah. Swinging in hard.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, two people and we are already 40% of the goal. If we break the goal somehow, if enough people chip in to make this happen and we get extra on top of, what we are requesting, any extra money will go to PSVR games, anything like if there's anything special that people want to hear reviews of, we're always open to it. So we'll do what we can.
So basically you're saying that you're going to review the Xbox One Scorpio that's going to be like $1,000 next year, right?
No, Lord. I'm sure I'll be getting that myself. So
I want one.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait for the wife to kill me when the price of that gets announced. I'm like, honey.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to be expensive.
The Scorpio's coming out. How much is it? $4,000. Fuck off.
Oh my God. That would be ridiculous.
I don't think it's going to be over a grand. I really don't think they're going to do that. Look at the Steam machines. Like they release those for $700 or $800 and no one gives a shit about them because of the price.
Really? I didn't even really recognize or realize when they came out.
Yeah, they sell them in Walmart. They sell them in GameStop. They're like Alienware Steam machines, and they're just like no one get. They just sit there collecting dust because they're so expensive.
I literally have never seen one in a GameStop or Walmart. And I've been to them plenty. That's surprising.
I got them in mine. So if my little podunk nowhere Wooksbear Walmart has their little Alienware Steam machines, like they're not the official, like from Steam, they're from Alienware, but they're still like console-ish Steam boxes to play computer games on your TV.
I'd rather just play it on my monitor.
See, I'd rather be over on my couch instead of sitting on this uncomfortable computer chair. But what are you going to...
I have to use my computer chair for both anyway, so... My Xbox is right next to my PC. I just turn, there I am.
So you're like Chris in that respect.
I don't know. Probably.
He has his Xbox just hooked up to his computer monitor.
Oh, no. I have both setups like so close to each other that I just turned the chair and there I am.
Good times. But yeah, feel free to check out the GoFundMe and kick a couple of bucks our way if you have it to spare. And there's a handful of different rewards where we could give you a shout out on the show, or we could discuss a topic you want us to discuss, or you could even join us on the show.
Holy shit, did I donate $50?
I wish.
Oh.
you owe us. This is your...
Oh, God. I don't have that much money for months. What are you
talking? You fucked up now, son. You fucked up.
Oh, God.
But anyway, like I said, we have an N++ interview coming later in the show. But before that, we still have a handful of games that we need to get through from this crazy, crazy, hectic week. And CJ, you actually reviewed two of them for us this week, didn't you?
I did.
You did. So let us start off with the game Shiny, developed by Garage 227, published by 1C Company. It released August 31st on Steam for $12.99. The Xbox One version has been delayed to October, unfortunately. CJ, what did you think of this one?
It was actually pretty interesting. It's a 2D platformer. It kind of actually reminded me of a PlayStation 2 game in the way the cutscenes looked. Very kind of blandish, but in a good way, that actually, because I'm a little bit younger, I'm an 18-year-old.
Holy shit! My first console shit.
Was a PlayStation 2. Oh, what? You didn't know that?
I did not know you're that young. Oh my god.
Well, I mean, I've been telling you, I live with my dad still. I mean, I'm pretty young. But, yeah, that takes me back to my original console, so it's like, for me, that felt awesome to look at that and be like, oh my god, this brings back memories. And the gameplay looks a little bit better than that. It's the gameplay I would pass off as like a good game, like nice, almost PlayStation 4 style graphics. The gameplay is a little bit weird. The jumping is a little bit annoying. There's not much of a difference between holding jump and tapping, like in most platformers.
Yeah,
it's like a millimeter, so it really doesn't make a difference which one you do. I always just hold it because it's like, whatever. And I'm always tense when I'm playing them, so I don't really notice a difference. I actually tested it by just jumping in the same spot, and yeah, I can confirm there's like no difference. The other challenging thing is that there is a charge bar, so you only have a limited amount of battery, and you have to get to checkpoints to refill your battery. But it can take time, and if you get hit by an obstacle like a rock, or maybe something else happens, like you fall, you take quite a bit of damage, and that can really drain your battery. And so you have to go to checkpoints to refill them, but if you die, you have to go back to the last checkpoint. And each checkpoint has a certain amount of lives that you're allowed to respawn on them. So most of the time they're 15. And if you die 15 times, rather than going back to the previous checkpoint, you instead have to restart the entire level. On each level, there are collectibles. There are batteries for your ship, although I'm not sure really the importance of the ship. There was a cutscene, but there's no dialogue in the game, so it's a little hard to follow at the beginning. But you have to repair your ship, because it did blow up. I know that much. And the goal is to get all the batteries you can to recharge your ship, as well as rescue robots that are damaged and broken, and you have to come across them, find them, they're in hidden areas, and when you rescue them, you get a half bar of special energy, which you can then use to activate overcharge if you get a full bar, making you invincible and allowing you to use your abilities for an unlimited amount. It will run out, though, so planning to use it is important.
Makes sense.
And if you mess up and die and go back to the checkpoint, you do not get that thing back. So if you needed it, needed your overcharge to get past a certain point, you're kind of screwed. There are all multiple abilities in the game. I only came across two of them, an electric shield that protects you from falling rocks, and a water cooler that cools you down if you get too warm. The water cooler is introduced in level 8 and makes the game way, way harder. If you come in contact with fire, you will become too hot, and then you have to press the ability button over and over again to stay cool, but that drains your battery pretty fast, and once you come in contact with fire, you never fully cool down. So that means that you got to keep pressing that button over and over again while trying to do your platforming.
Oh, man.
Really difficult. It honestly made the game go from frustrating at times to infuriatingly difficult. Don't be mistaken, this game is not a casual platformer. In fact, when the water cooler was introduced in level 8, I never beat it. I couldn't get past level 8. I tried hours.
Oh, you scrub.
Oh, it's
like,
so
that's
difficult.
Like shiz levels of scrubbery.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's just so hard, though. it's really difficult. The soundtrack is quite nice. I really do enjoy the music. It's somewhat relaxing, well, as much as it can be relaxing for a hard game. However, in high-stress moments, the game music picks up and sounds amazing. I almost didn't want to finish the level because I enjoyed the music so much. I did have a small problem, which was the loading times. They would take a while, and your music would just stop, so I thought at first the game had just crashed. But it, after like a minute, it would resume, but it was just like, that took you out of the moment. It's like, whoa.
Need a better music loop going on.
Something like that, or make the load times a little bit faster. Overall, I like the game despite it being very hard, but I doubt I'll ever try to beat level 8 again. I'd say try it if you're good at platformers and enjoy a challenge.
Hey, I didn't get to play the game myself. I was hoping to cover on the Xbox One, but unfortunately, because that one got delayed, couldn't really do anything there. Hopefully, when it does hit the Xbox One, we can give a second opinion on it. Looking at the videos and the screenshots and everything, I thought it looked pretty good. So,
yeah, it did look pretty good, and it was fun to play. It just it had its annoyances.
So the difficulty could be a turnoff for some people, but try it. Sounds pretty good. So I might have to check it out, and it's got great reviews on Steam. So I guess you just suck.
I can't be level 8.
You punk scrub.
So hard.
Speaking of frustratingly difficult, the game Solar Shifter EX, developed by Elder Games, published by Head Up Games, released August 26th for $9.99. The description on this one is warp into action with Solar Shifter EX. Man your ship and dive into fierce combat situations in space and over beautiful and distant planet surfaces. Solar Shifter EX is a sci-fi shoot 'em up with the unique ability to shift, and what that means is this is pretty much like a standard 2D shmup, left and right shoot enemies that come at you. They do change it up a lot by shifting the camera angle, so it feels more involved than just a top down shoot 'em up. Like you're occasionally shifting the perspective left or up and down and diagonal and stuff like that, so it keeps it fresh looking. Although the gameplay is still basically the same. The shifting mechanic that they're mentioning is that any notice, your ship could just teleport to one of four different locations. You can either hold one of the buttons on the controller and use the normal analog stick to move, or you could use the right analog stick and just jump instantly up, down, left, and right. So left and right obviously shift you to the very left and very right of the stage. Up pushes you center a bit forward, and then down center below you normally. And it can definitely help get out of some hairy situations, because this is a tough game. You have a life bar, but most of the time it doesn't matter, because I think you get like 4 hits.
Ouch.
And then you just boom, dead. Thankfully, they are fairly generous with the checkpoints in the game, and there are unlimited lives, so as long as you have the patience to keep trying to get through areas, you can keep trying to get through those areas that are kicking your ass. Once you beat the first stage, it unlocks a sub-weapon, so you have, like, missiles shooting along. As you blow up enemies in the game, they'll drop credits that you could pick up and pay to increase the strength of your weapon and sub-weapon. There are giant bosses that you gotta deal with, which look really good. Basically, the game comes down to memorization for the most part, because a lot of the enemies, I think pretty much everything is on a set path, where the enemy comes out, they shoot in dedicated paths, they move in dedicated paths. So as long as you can memorize what you gotta do and where you gotta go, you're gonna be okay with this game. But if you forget anything, you're probably gonna die and blow up a lot, which I have done quite a bit.
Sounds like you could speedrun this game.
You can definitely, I wouldn't say speedrun, because it is like an on rails top-down shooter, but you can go for like a no death or a no damage kind of run. There are achievements in the game for, you know, beat the boss without damage, beat the stage without damage. So it is very much possible to get through the game without getting hit at all. It just comes down to memorization. So old school bullet hell for sure. even though it's not like, it's not as crowded a screen as like a bullet hell, it has the same play style to it, where if you can memorize the right paths, you can just destroy this game.
That sounds pretty awesome. The game looks great from the screenshots.
Yeah, game's pretty cool. Having a lot of fun with it. $10 I think is a pretty good price for it, so I'm gonna give it a try. Just keep in mind that the difficulty can push you, and while you do have a health bar and it seems mostly useless, there are occasionally health pickups dropped by enemies, so you might be able to get through an area without dying, but for the rest of us gamers, there are plentiful checkpoints to try and help matters a bit.
Well, plentiful checkpoints are always nice.
Yeah, so try it on that one. It's enjoyable, it's good stuff, and it looks great. So, good stuff. Next game to chat about is called 140, developed by Carlson Games, published by Double Fine, released August 30th on Xbox One for $7.99. 140 is a challenging, minimalistic platformer with abstract, colorful graphics. Rhythmic awareness is required to overcome obstacles controlled by an energetic, yet melancholic, electronic soundtrack. This is pretty much standard 2D platformer. Move left and right. You are a circle rolling around. When you jump, you turn into a triangle. When you land, when you stop, you turn into a square. So there's no difference between the forms. It's just a cool little touch.
It looks...
The driving force to this game is the visuals and the soundtrack. The music in this game is ridiculously good.
Yeah, I heard some of it and I was in love. Like, I want this game.
It is really good. My biggest gripe is that it is short. There are three main stages in the game. Each stage has like five or six different sections, as well as a quote unquote boss battle. You don't really have attacks or anything, so it basically comes down to like dodging things or, you know, just staying alive to quote-unquote beat the bosses. But after you beat the three stages, it unlocks a mirror mode, which is like a hard mode where you got to beat them in a mirrored layout and no checkpoints.
That sounds difficult.
Yeah, the first time you go through some of the stages, there's a lot of trial and error and stuff, which it's not too bad, because in normal, the checkpoints are, you know, there's plenty of them. You're not going to be like, oh my god, I just got through that area and I fucked up and now I'm going to have to redo that whole thing again. No, you're just, as soon as you get through it, you'll see a checkpoint. Don't worry.
Oh, that's nice. I watched Shiz play some, and yeah, the checkpoints were everywhere.
Yeah,
literally every jump, it felt like there was a checkpoint in the normal mode.
In hard mode, no checkpoint. So I was watching another friend of the show, Memories of Final Play, and he would get to like the last checkpoint and or not checkpoint, but like the last section where normally there would be a checkpoint and something would kill him and he'd be like, oh, I gotta go all the way back.
That sounds brutal.
Yeah, so hard mode is definitely hard mode in this game. The biggest thing with this is the visuals, the soundtrack, you know, the background of the stages is like kind of like an equalizer with bars jumping up and down and flashing colors. And it's just a really, really cool looking game. It's not going to blow people's minds with the intensity of the graphic. Like, it's not hyper realistic looking, but it's just a really good audiovisual experience overall to just take it all in and just like drink it in, man.
I love games like that where you play to the music. It's such a cool feature.
Yeah, and there's a lot of games where you have to play to the music, but this is different in that the stage kind of plays itself to the music. Like, a lot of the jumps and traps and platforms are timed to the music. So while you don't have to, you know, you don't have to jump on beat or move on beat like some games, you have to react to the beat as well, and usually a little before, so you can, you know, plan everything properly.
It just boggles my mind that developers can get that deep into doing that.
It's so awesome.
Sick.
It is so cool. It's such a cool experience. My only real gripes with it are the length, which for an $8 game, I guess you can't complain too much because it's not like a $15 game that they're boasting. It's this massive thing. So three stages, the reverse stages. So it's six. I mean, the stages aren't short. They're long enough to keep you coming back and to try and learn them so you can master them for the mirror mode. There are no, like, if you get halfway through and you're like, I can't figure this out, I'll come back later. There's no permanent checkpoints. Like, if you quit out, you're starting over.
Oh, like the whole game, not just the level?
Well, that level you'll have to start.
Oh, okay. That's better.
But like, if you hit the fourth checkpoint in level two and you come back, when you restart the game, you're going to have to start over from level two, the beginning.
All right. Okay. I see that.
And there's no pausing in the game either.
Well, at least with the checkpoints on normal, it's like no pausing, but you can just kind of sit there and if you die, whatever, just go back. On hard, I'm sure that's not great to take a break.
Overall, I dig it. For $8, definite try it. The difficulty in the harder stuff might scare people off. And then the third boss, a lot of it comes down to luck and reflexes because you kind of have to quote unquote shoot at the enemy with the one thing, but they add twists to it where you'll position your gun and then it'll jump twice, like up, down, left, right. It'll jump twice and then shoot, and then it'll jump once and then shoot. So you have to make sure you're positioned right so that when it jumps the twice, it hits the proper target. Otherwise you die. And then the step after that is not only does your gun rotate on you, but so do the enemies.
Oh, God.
So it felt like that was coming down more to luck than just, like, I don't know how people are going to beat that on hard difficulty without fucking up, but I'm sure people out there will do it because I'm old and I don't have skills anymore.
I'm sure somebody has done it.
I'm waiting for Jakes, who writes into the show, showing off all his insane accomplishments in the game, like beating binaries in under 6 hours.
Wow, I haven't seen any of that game, but from what I've heard, that's brutal.
Especially you didn't watch Shiz play that?
I did not. I wasn't actually able to show up that night. I was really sad, too, because they dropped a crap ton of codes.
Oh, he's so bad. He is so bad.
And 140 is actually on Steam. Normal price is $5. I'll just point that out there.
There you go.
Steam gamers. So that's even better. There you go. Five.
So yeah, 140. Try it. Good stuff.
Sounds great.
Next game. We're going to go with Nightmares from the Deep 2, The Siren's Call. All my information is being covered by my cat right now, who is deciding to attack everything possible on my desk.
Oh. I know that feeling.
Pork. Get the fuck down. Get the fuck out of here. Developed and published by the good people at Artifex Mundi, released August 26th on the Xbox One for $9.99, answer the siren's call and defeat the cruel Mayor Murray and his pet sea monster, the Kraken, in Nightmares from the Deep 2, The Siren's Call. Our friend Uneaten Lake wrote in with this one, and CJ, you are going to attempt to read it.
Yeah, strong emphasis on the word attempt. I'm not great at reading a lot.
You'll be fine.
Oh, I'm sure I can handle it. The writing's nice and big. Nightmares from the Deep 2, The Siren's Call, is a hidden object point-and-click game from Artifex Mundi. It is a sequel to Nightmares from the Deep, The Cursed Heart. The Nightmares from the Deep series is already on Game 3 on Steam, so it's nice to see Artifex Mundi is continuing the being the series on Xbox One. I'm pretty sure he means bringing.
He had a typo.
Yeah, he did. You play as Sarah Black, a museum curator who seems to find herself mixed up in curses revolving around Davy Jones. We find out that after the first game that she's now an author who's written a book about the adventure she had with Captain Remington from the first game. The game takes place 1 year after the events of Nightmares from the Deep, The Cursed Heart. This time, instead of trying to rescue your daughter, you find yourself in a situation where you're trying to save the island town of Kingsmouth from Mayor Murray. We come to find out that Mayor Murray and the people of Kingsmouth have been cursed by Davy Jones. It's up to you to solve puzzles to break the curse and save the town. I don't want to get too into the story other than what I've said. I've enjoyed the story, the dialogue, and the music in the game. The cutscenes are a bit better graphically than Nightmares from the Deep game.
than the first.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what he means again.
Well, he has that there. You just missed it.
The first. Oh, shit. See, I told you I'm bad at reading. Sorry. Forgive me, Uneaten Lake. I believe that there are a few new types of puzzles as well. Some puzzles will leave achievement hunters frustrated simply because you can't spam the A button over and over again just to finish the puzzle, or the hidden object puzzle like you could in the first game. Also, new to the Nightmares from the Deep series is the ability to teleport to places you've already been.
Oh, in the first game,
you had to navigate forward and backwards to transverse the game. Now, if you pick up a clue that needs to be used 5 screens back, you can pull up the map and click on where you want to go. The teleportion in this game makes it a lot easier to play. The hidden object puzzles can be skipped in favor of Mahjong puzzles. I totally forgot about this during my first playthrough, or my playthrough of the first game, and ended up playing Mahjong for the majority of playing this game. There are 44 collectibles to find, and if you're an achievement hunter, 19 octopus, 18 parrots, and 7 seahorses. Some of these items you will find without trying. The rest, though, you may need a walkthrough to find if you either sit far away from the TV or have a small TV. The game was originally released on PC, so it's a little understandable how hidden some of the collectibles are. If you've ever played and enjoyed the other point-and-click hidden object games from Artifex Mundi, you're going to enjoy this one as well. This game seemed to flow a little faster than the first game. I can't wait to play the third and see what other trouble Sarah Black gets into with Davy Jones. I would give this game a buy it, but only after playing the first Nightmares from the Deep. Holy shit, that was so hard to get through. I'm so bad at reading.
You had a couple stumbles, but for the most part, not bad.
Oh, it was my nightmare back when I was in school. I was like, oh God, I had to read a lot.
Were you the kid that when the teacher picked on you to read something, you're like, fuck me?
Yeah, pretty much. I was just like, I'm sick. Can the next person read?
And cool enough, we actually got an email from Joe Carter, one of the people who won a copy of Nightmares from the Deep 2 from us last week on the show. We gave her the code and I told her to let us know how much she enjoyed this one since she enjoys the series. And she said, I thought it was an awesome continuation of the series, a lot smoother than the predecessor. The puzzles made contextual sense. Pleasure to play. Good story. Thank you again. So Joe, I am glad you liked the game. And thanks again to Artifex Mundi for being so awesome to us with their games on the Xbox One.
Yeah, they're a pretty cool company.
I think I hear that static Shiz was talking about.
It'll probably go away now or in a second.
Is your headset borked or something?
It's a little weird. I'm not sure what causes it, but it goes away after a second or so.
It sounds like the noise room, like when you're not talking, it seems to, like the microphone's trying to pick up something. I don't know.
Is it bad? Or is it?
I'm sure I can noise reduce that shit.
All right.
Cool. Then again, our show is not known for its technical prowess.
Well, neither am I. So.
Next game, we mentioned it briefly before, Binaries, developed by Ant Workshop, published by Ground Shatter. It released August 30th on Xbox One and PS4 for $9.99. Test your reflexes and awareness as you simultaneously guide two lovable balls through over 100 brightly colored challenges in a controller-smashingly tough platformer. If you did not listen to our interview with Tony Goland of Ant Workshop, you should go back and do that because he is a wonderful guy. Fun to talk with, and we had a nice hour-long chat, and this game is controller-smashingly difficult for sure. There are 101 stages, and in each stage, you are using the analog stick to move and the A button to jump, where your analog stick and the A button control two balls at the same time.
That looks
across multiple paths.
I'm looking at the screenshots on Steam and that looks difficult.
I compared it to if you've watched people do speedruns of like playing Mega Man X1 and X2 at the same time on different TVs and consoles, but with one single controller, it's like that, but the game actively hates you.
What?
Because you have to pay attention. Like, many of the courses are split up into two separate sections where the orange ball has its own path and the blue ball has its own path, and they'll each have unique obstacles, so you have to jump properly to navigate those obstacles with both balls, even though it might not be there for one of them, or the obstacle might be shifted enough for the other one that if you jump wrong, you'll die with one ball but not the other.
And then I'm assuming you have to get both.
Oh yeah, you got to get both balls to the end of the level.
Ouch.
And then there's plenty of stages where instead of having two separate paths, it's all just one big stage. And, you know, areas will be split up. It's, you know, some sections of the level will be orange, where if there's spikes there, the orange ball will die, but the blue one won't.
Well, that's pretty unique.
So it's tough. It's so simple to pick up and play, but it's difficult. It is not an easy game. And yet Jake's 123, who has won a handful of difficult games from us in the past, beat the game 1,000 out of 1,000 achievement points in under 6 hours.
It's easy. Don't
he shared the picture on Twitter, and Tony was tagged in it. And even he was like, how? Like, how did you do? What is wrong with you? How are you this goddamn good at the game?
Sounds like he's some sort of prodigy when it comes to platformers.
He's nuts. He's beaten so many games that we've given out on this show, like Jump Jet Rex, Phoenix Furia. He just makes these difficult games his bitch. And I don't understand it.
That's illogical.
It is insane. But yeah, Binaries, I don't want to go too into it because we did devote an entire interview to it. So go listen to that episode instead. Instead, I just want to say that this is a hearty try it. The difficulty will turn a lot of people off, so it is not for everyone. So if you rage at super difficult games, you're going to want to skip this. For everyone else, it is absolutely worth the $10.
Oh, I think I'll check that one out. I hate my life already, so why not make it a little more rage-filled?
And if need be, go watch Shiz Blacka play it and laugh at how bad he is.
That always makes me feel better after a long day.
Every time that you feel bad about what kind of a gamer you are, you could just go watch Shiz Blacka play anything.
It's just and like, feel better. Compared to this dude, I could do anything.
He was playing Hue last night, which we covered on this show before. And, like, he beat the game, and then he went back through some of the stages to get collectibles. And it's, like, puzzles that he solved a half hour prior, he still couldn't figure out. It's like, you just did this.
And the rage he was building up at the game just because bad mistakes.
Oh, it was magical.
Like,
it was magical how pissed he would get. And his problem was he would overcomplicate everything. Like if there was something where you just move a box, jump on it, and then jump to the right, he would instead try to figure out how to like get the box on top of things and up and around the long way instead of just doing the easy thing.
Oh my God, I literally know what part you're talking about. I was there. So that's even funnier to me.
It is amazing. And no matter what he does, he will still never trump the fact that I was the first person in the world to get 1,000 achievement points in that game.
Fucking damn, I wish I could accomplish that as an achievement hunter. Yeah. That's a goal.
It was it was such an amazing feeling.
I bet it was.
First person.
Now you're on that leaderboard forever as the number one.
Forever.
Until somebody hacks it and then says that they completed a space.
Can you hack the True Achievements website?
I don't know. I don't know if anybody's tried. I'm at Xbox Achievements. Maybe put a wrong timestamp on it. I mean, it's...
Who knows?
I'm assuming it'd be harder to do on Xbox One with a stupid online all the time thing.
Hey, I think it's better that way. Because now people can't, like, just hack their achievements like they did on the 360.
But it sucks for people that do it legitimately, because there's some points in which either you lose connection, and then it's like, oh, my achievement was supposed to pop during that, and now it didn't. Or, or you just having problems with the online servers on Xbox, and it's like, okay, now I gotta wait 4 days for this achievement. I had that problem so much in Dreamals, because it was just, like, the Xbox servers were so messed up during that time period.
Oh, and that was such a hard game, too. God damn. So many tough platformers.
It was hard, but I kind of cheated a little bit.
Oh, did you use guides?
For some of the levels, I had to.
Oh, that was like Shiz using guides for the collectibles and Hue. I'm like, be a man and do it for real. I didn't have a guide when I did it, because no one else had the game when I had it.
I'm so sorry, I betrayed you.
You horrible cheater. Anyway, final game to talk about is called The Final Station. This is developed by Do My Best Games, published by the wonderful people at Tiny Build. Released August 30th on Steam, Xbox One, and PS4 for $14.99. Travel by train through a dying world. Look after your passengers, keep your train operational, and make sure you can always reach the next station. Make your way through swarms of infected at each station. Explore mysterious and abandoned stations looking for supplies and survivors. CJ, this was one of your games to tackle, so let's hear what you thought about this one.
Well, The Final Station is a 2D pixel art platformer, and it looks amazing. The backgrounds on the train are awesome, the building designs are very neat, and the underground sections look crazy, like the hidden labs and the hideouts are just ridiculous. The devs really knew how to make the pixel art look good, and that is no small task. As we've seen with a lot of pixel art games, it's meh. Like, there's nothing to it, but this game is like, you did it right.
I do enjoy the fact that you misspelled pixel.
Did I?
Yeah, E-L.
Nobody saw that. You don't need to bring it up.
Calling you out.
Just aiming to take me down. The gameplay is fun and oftentimes a little bit worrying. You'll ask yourself questions like, will I have enough ammo? Is there zombies in the next room? Is it worth risking my life to go in a room that may or may not have useful items? The aiming is done with the right stick on the controller, or the far more accurate way with the mouse. I wanted to use the mouse, but this game doesn't allow for remapping controls. So instead of using like WASD, I'd normally use the arrow keys because I'm left-handed when it comes to PC gaming. Uh-huh. And you can't do that, which means I had to use the controller. So, and using a controller for the aiming is a little bit more difficult because it's not as precise. And so you'll miss a shot by like a millimeter and it'll be like, I just wasted a bullet of like the 6 bullets I have. Damn it.
Oh, man.
Things can get stressful in the game. You are limited by how much ammo you can have. It is useful to check every room to find ammo, but sometimes it isn't worth it. Sometimes you'll come across a room that looks promising, but then there will be a lot of zombies in it. And when you clear out the zombies, you'll find that you wasted all your bullets and there's nothing great in that room.
Oh, true survival horror.
Yeah, it really is. It does something unique with not being able to actually see what the rooms look like until you go within them. So you'll have to open up the door or climb up a ladder to actually see what's in the room. Otherwise, it's just grayed out on your screen, and you can't tell what's in there. So that means you actually have to look actively to know where to go to avoid zombies. or to get supplies, and you run the risk of running into them. The story is pretty interesting. You are a train conductor who's put in charge of transporting important cargo and rescuing survivors at different train stops, where the zombies have taken over. While riding the train, the survivors tell you their story as well as what they believe is going on. Of course, the train rides aren't that simple. You have to manage the power consumption on the train or it will come to a complete halt, as well as feed and give medical treatment to your survivors. The survivors can die if you don't manage their health and hunger. The only annoying thing about it is that you will need to use med kits to heal some survivors, and that can be a annoyance if you get hurt outside, because you also need the same med kits. So, I would honestly just, anybody that was bleeding out and needed a med kit, I'd just let them die. Because you can continue. You don't have to save everybody. And so I would just let them die because I need those med kits. I got hurt way too often to just waste them on them. They do give you rewards if you transfer them, and sometimes the rewards are really useful, other times they're not great. You really just gotta figure out which survivors are worth saving if they are bleeding out. And if they're not bleeding out, all you gotta do is give them food, which is plentiful in the game, so it's not that hard to keep them alive if they're not hurt. There were even some suspenseful moments due to the dark lighting and the spooky sound effects in some stations. Honestly, through all of Chapter 2, I thought I was going to get something jumping out at me. They did a really good job of changing the mood so quickly, going from a normal zombie-killing feeling to tense and unsure what's going to happen. Yeah, I was like, that. Some of that music and sound effects are just like, oh god, something's going to kill me.
Nice.
The ending of the game was a bit weird, and while I won't spoil it, I will say that it'll leave you with more questions left unanswered than answered, which can be a kind of annoying disappointment.
Is this something that, like, sets up for a sequel?
It sets up for what the devs said in the Steam forums, because somebody was asking, like, why was the ending chose like that? And they said that they're leaving it open for possible DLC.
Alright.
So.
Makes sense.
The price tag of $14.99 can be another bit of, undecider, because it's like, the game's very short. It only took 4 hours for me to beat it. And I can imagine for some people, $15 for 4 hours may not be worth it. If they have a low income, and they want a game that they can play for a while, this one probably isn't the one to choose.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Overall, the game was enjoyable, a little challenging due to the low weapon ammo, and beautiful to look at. I'd say try it simply because the price tag is a bit too heavy for what this game offers. But, if you're looking for a fun little game, this is a good one. I enjoyed it a lot.
I loved how unique the game was, because you covered it on Steam. I covered the Xbox One version, kind of like a second opinion. And I love the fact that, like, it just starts off as a sim game. Like, when it starts off, if you haven't paid attention to it, you think you're just some dude, you know, running a train, and it doesn't, like, you don't see the zombies coming right away.
It takes about 30 minutes to finally get to the point to where there's something actually going on. At first,
it's such a weird twist, because you start off thinking, oh, it's like a train simulator game. This is pretty neat. Yeah, exploring, and, you know, it's more than just managing a train. You're, like, talking to people, and there's, like, quests and managing things, and, oh, I gotta take care of this on the train. And that's like, what the fuck is there a zombie doing here for?
Some of the survivors' stories are pretty interesting. I stuck around for as long as I could just reading what they had to say. I mean, there's no voice acting in the game, but it gives you dialogue boxes and you read those.
It's a very detailed game. Like, they handle a lot of the little tiny details really well in the game. And I think it's a really impressive game. Again, the like you said, the length can be an issue. But given how many people will drop $60 for an 8-hour game, I think 15 for 4 isn't that bad. Especially because it is a good 4 hours.
It is. It's an enjoyable time.
But yeah, I can definitely agree with the try-up for what you claim. And I think it's a solid game either way. So
it is. It's fun.
So yeah, how was your first time joining the show as a co-host?
And a little bit nerve-wracking, especially not being able to read. I'm terrible.
Making you handle words and shit.
Dude, I stumbled so much on Uneaten Lakes. I started somewhat like that, I'm supposing. I'm just going to skip this part of the show when I watch it on YouTube. I'll just go straight to the interview.
No, I wouldn't skip too much of it because we talked about the game 140, and we actually have the title theme for 140. I'm going to play that, and then we'll jump into the N++ interview to take out the rest of the show. So good music coming ahead. But for everybody else who did enjoy everything and listen to this, give them some final words. You're the guest, so let's hear it. What have you got for your final words?
Buy Joe a PS4 VR. I think those are some good words.
You said it, not me. All right, my interview at this time, I am welcoming two of the wonderful folks from MetaNet Software, Reagan Burns, Mayor Shepard. How are you two doing today?
Hi.
Thanks. Hi, we're good. How are you?
I am doing fine. It's a little toasty. My wife came home from work and decided to turn the air conditioner off for some reason. But aside from that, doing pretty good.
Nice.
You're North Carolina?
Oh, Toronto.
Who am I thinking in North Carolina then? What is wrong with me?
I don't know, actually,
yeah.
Man, I am talking to way too many people on this show. So, Canada. How's Canada doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
It's still hot. Maybe a bit too hot, but...
Yeah, Toronto gets really humid, so we're kind of dealing with that at the moment. But, you know, at the same time, it's better than the 8 months of the year that are winter here, so...
I hear that. I'm in Pennsylvania, so we either get stupidly frigid cold or, like, nut-sweatingly hot summer.
Yeah,
that's our weather system, too. It sucks. I don't know how anyone settled this continent. It's like...
Yeah, I agree.
Like, what the hell were they thinking?
Especially before air conditioning.
Man, and to think, like... Common air conditioners are still more of a modern thing. Like, I'm trying to think back to when I was a kid. All I had was a fan.
Yeah.
Like, how did I sleep at night?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that you can get used to it, because, I mean, obviously large parts of the world that are really hot still don't have a lot of air conditioning, but I don't know.
First world problems.
First world problems.
So, MetaNet Software, you are the wonderful folks behind N, N+, and N++, correct?
Yep.
So, my first question is, do you realize there are other letters in the alphabet?
Actually, once we had an idea that following N, we would make a pirate game called R. That never happened, though.
No.
Why? Why didn't that happen?
Yeah, we might get back to it. Who knows? But it turns out, and this may be a surprise to some people, that single letter games are really hard to search for. So it's not really, I mean, if that's the name of your game, you're going to have a few problems.
It's definitely continued to plague us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we reviewed N++ on the show a week or so ago. And when I tried tagging the game on Facebook, it was a goddamn chore to do. And I just gave up and tagged MetaNet instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we've kind of switched to, like, writing it all out when we do hashtags and stuff, like NPLUS, because, yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the internet doesn't like symbols.
Yeah.
They get stripped.
It's a shame.
I even tried spelling it out, and, like, I had the game page pulled up, but every time I was writing the post and I tried, you know, at NPLUS, like, it wouldn't find it.
Wow.
So... I tried. I made an effort.
Thank you for that.
So, for those who don't know what the N series of games is, give us the sales pitch.
All right. Well, they're momentum-based platformers where you get to run and jump around and basically feel like a ninja, which is why the main character is a ninja. And it's a single screen, and you're a tiny little ninja, so you kind of get to see the whole level at once and then figure out your plan through it. And then try to execute that plan. And there are a whole bunch of inadvertently homicidal robots in each level that you're trying to avoid. Because this ninja is a pacifist, so you've got to use your skills to get out of the way really fast. Instead of, you know, trying to take them down or whatever. But, yeah, we just...
I don't know, yeah. It's sort of like... I think it's sort of inspired by arcade games and that kind of, like, pure game design.
Yeah.
But... just applied to sort of a weird kind of platforming. Like, it definitely gets lumped in with, like, massacre platformers, and, you know, like, hard platformers in general, but we feel like it's actually not the same as those, because those pretty much all feature, you know, this sort of basic kind of movement, whereas in all of the N games, the movement is way more like something in Trials, where you don't have direct control over your position. You can just sort of accelerate it, and that it gives a real sense of weight and a real sort of performative element. Like, it really feels a lot more like parkour than most platformers. And I don't know, I think that's like the main unique thing about it. Also, we have like I think we're pretty good at level design. That's something. So we've been making levels for more than a decade. So I think we're, I'm pretty proud of like what we've managed to do with N++. I think that that is something that hopefully people will appreciate.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that, we've tried to do a lot of variety in the level design, and also because the game is performative and it's sort of, you know, you have opportunities to improv sort of while you're playing, and we also, in the level design, have created a whole range of different goals. So there are a lot of options for players. You can play for speedrunning or just for fun, or you can try to get high scores, or you can set yourself little challenges and then do them. So we're kind of trying to support a whole bunch of different players so that there's something that people can kind of really get into no matter how they want to play.
I'm realizing this is turning into less of an elevator pitch and more of a...
Yeah, it's not really...
Maybe the elevator's out and we're taking the stairs.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Leisurely walk is always fun.
Okay.
So you mentioned that you feel like the game gets lumped in with like those hardcore, hard platformers. Are you claiming that your game is not hard? Because I am going to call you a liar.
No, absolutely not. It's definitely hard.
It's definitely hard. Well, the thing is, it definitely gets hard.
Yeah, it starts easier.
Yeah, I mean, certainly this is something that in N and N Plus, I think it would be more fair to say that they're just hard, especially the original N. It was much more of a, like, throw people in at the deep end.
Yes, see what happens.
But this time we actually tried to do a much better job of, like, onboarding the player and kind of getting them up to speed. Because it is, like, it seems very simple, but there are all kinds of nuances to the movement mechanics. And it can take a long time to kind of learn all of the subtleties of movement. So it's definitely hard. I mean, and actually, it's probably the hardest game ever if you're trying to 100% it, because we've added stuff that is like you have to have been playing for 10 years to have a chance of attempting. Actually, we just saw there was a stream last night of someone who has been playing for 10 years that's way better than us even, and doing some of like we embedded all these like I don't want to spoil it too much, but once you've played the game and you've collected a lot of gold and stuff, it starts unlocking these even crazier challenges for you that and it's really so it definitely extends, I think, far beyond what pretty much any other game has offered in terms of difficulty, but that's all hidden way past the end of the game. It's kind of like, I'm sorry if all our questions are super, our answers are super rambly, but just about the hard thing, I think one thing that really sets this series apart, especially N++, compared to other games that are, you know, hard platformers, is that the way that, like, our philosophy is like not to be punishing. Because in a lot of hard platformers, the level is hard and you just have to deal with it. There's this one route that you have to take and you just have to kind of learn it. But something we really tried to do a lot of in N++ is make it so that the difficulty is opt-in so that it's actually pretty trivial to just beat the level. Some of the, like, obviously near the end of the game, it ramps up and it's still really hard, but it's much easier if you don't try to get all the gold. If you just are just playing to beat the level and move to the next level, it's actually moderately challenging for most of the game. If you're trying to get all the gold, then it gets a bit crazy. Or at least then the difficulty spikes are extremely dramatic. And I don't know, I really like I think that that's something pretty unique that we've created a sort of opt-in difficulty where you're not selecting it from a menu. You can just kind of try to do an all gold run. And then if you miss a piece or it ends up feeling a bit too hard, you can just be like, oh, screw it. I'm just going to the next level kind of thing. Which I think is just like, it's just, we made it that way because that's what we like. That we don't really enjoy those platformers where it's like someone like smacking you with a stick and saying like, press this. And you know, like to us, really, games are about play. They're about sort of expressing yourself and just enjoying.
Experimenting.
Yeah.
And trying stuff and seeing what's fun about it.
So we definitely try to keep things loose and make sure that there's lots of different solutions to each level.
Yeah.
Some of which are harder and maybe get you a better score, but they're always going to be easier approaches.
That are still satisfying.
Yeah.
Is getting hit with a stick paid DLC or is that, are you guys still working on the technology for that?
Yeah, we haven't finished working on the peripheral.
Yeah.
I'm, That would be amazing that you just pay, like, it's DLC that's like $99.99. You click on it, and like 2 hours later, someone knocks on the door, just punches you in the face, and leaves.
Actually, I mean, it's not exactly the same, but we heard from a psychiatrist or a psychologist? It was someone, some doctor who was, worked at a clinic that dealt with people that had, like anxiety and anger issues. And he would actually have them play N, and it was, he had this special apparatus. It was like hooked up to, monitors that monitored your heart rate and, skin conductivity and stuff. So it could tell when you were getting stressed, and it would shut the game off. So it was helping people train themselves to remain calm in the face of things that would otherwise make them angry or anxious. So we thought that was really cool. And it's sort of the same. I mean, it's like the opposite. I guess if it shocks you when you got angry, then that would be...
Oh my God, that'd be amazing.
Maybe...
Did you guys get any of the numbers from that guy who did that? Like, what the quickest was that the game shut off for someone?
Not really. He said
14 seconds. Fuck this.
I would imagine it was pretty... It's just more... I found it really interesting that he said it was actually effective in terms of getting people to... Like, over time, they could tolerate more and more without becoming agitated.
That's amazing.
That sort of... Anyone who's played the game and got good at it has had that experience, because really the only way to succeed on the harder levels is to retain some kind of zen-like calmness.
Focus.
So it's just cool that there is actually a therapeutic use, and it wasn't just, you know, entertainment or whatever.
Yeah.
And the good thing with this game is that if you're having trouble on an episode, there are so many friggin' stages in this game that you can just go to like 40 other ones.
That's definitely something we did intentionally, because like you said, it's just not fun when you get stuck in a game, and a lot of games, you know, give you like one or two routes, but this, like, because it can be so challenging, there's always, you always have 20 options. There's more if you want to try a different set of levels, but in each set you have 20 options, so we thought that was pretty fair. I mean, also, if you're stuck, you can just watch the high score replays to see how someone else beat it.
And then cry, knowing you'll never be that good.
I guess that is a problem. You can actually, because you can look at scores. No, that's true. Well, if you have friends that have beaten it, maybe they might not be so good.
Yeah.
That is certainly a problem we've had with the high scores, is that, like, over time, that aspect becomes less useful for beginners. But alas.
Do you have a way to, can you only watch the top run, or could you like pick, you know, like the 40th from the bottom and just try to beat that one?
In order to simplify the UI, we kind of restricted it so that it shows the top 20, but it will also show, like, there's three views. There's your friends, global top 20, and global scores around yours. So if you've already beaten it, you can see people that are near your skill level, but unfortunately, there's no way to just, like, scroll to, like, 200 and take a look.
You should just, like, add the bottom five.
So if people are really
struggling with it, they could just watch someone who took the longest time
that
and still made it through.
That is an amazing idea. I kind of, like, the problem is it kind of goes against, we're trying really hard to not be kind of mean or bullying, to try to be playful and, you know, be, like, challenge you, but not to kind of be a dick about it. I do think that adding a, like, worst, here's like the global worst 10 scores probably crosses that dick threshold. It would work so well. Like, if the game just was coming from a different place, I could see it working in a lot of, like, it's a hilarious idea. That's a really funny.
And just block out the name so you don't see who it is.
That's an even better idea. Actually, that makes it sort of less dickish. But
it's
really
dickish, but not that dickish.
Yeah. Just a hint. But I really don't want to, like, the UI was already sort of a nightmare. I don't know if we can cram another tab in there. It's certainly...
I believe in you. You can do it.
That's actually... I mean, maybe that's something we consider, like, as a special feature. We can just data mine, and we can pull out the replays, and then just make sort of a video for everyone of, like, world's worst N++ runs.
we'll
workshop it.
Yeah.
All right.
That's fantastic. I love giving ideas on this show, and it's even better when for some reason they're decent. So how many stages are there in the game total? I know it's something absurd, like 600, something like that.
Well, the main solo single player campaign is 600 levels. I don't want to spoil it, but there's 120 other levels that you might be able to find if you're really good.
Good Lord.
That are hidden. But the main thing is 600 levels. The tutorial is 125 levels. And then there's another 600 levels of like a best of N and N plus levels that we kind of digitally remastered to work in the new aspect ratio. And we added some of the new enemies and stuff. But yeah, the main campaign is about 600 levels. And like including all the multiplayer and stuff, it's 2,360 levels, I think.
Jesus Christ. But
it's actually, what's nuts is that that's only about half of the levels that we've made. It's just that we didn't have time, like half of the time spent in, you make the levels, but then there's a lot of editing and polish and arranging. So we didn't have time to do that for all the levels. So we just released half of what we had, and we're still working on the rest of them to kind of do updates and release more content over time.
Good God. Well, will those be free updates or DLC, or what's the plan with those?
Right now we're planning on it being free. We're like, most,
still figuring
yeah,
out.
The updates are mostly going to be free, but we're trying to figure out if there's some kind of paid thing that we can think of that works. But in general, we're leaning towards free.
$99.99 to have like an Uber driver stop over someone's house and punch them in the face. That's a partnership right there. That's how you make your money.
Maybe. I don't know if Uber for punching is really ready. I don't think that's mainstream
yet. Yeah, they're still on kittens and puppies and things, aren't they? There was a like Uber kittens day recently in Toronto where
you
drive around with kittens and you could have them come to your office or your school or whatever. Sound pretty great. But yeah. Maybe punching in the face is the next natural thing.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of kittens.
Yeah.
If anybody in the Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, Pennsylvania area needs kittens to hold and play with, I've got 8 cats at my house, so come on by.
Wow.
That sounds pretty cute.
Yeah, my wife and I have a problem.
We have friends that like they adopt rescue cats, so I think they've had 10 or 12 at a time.
So we were doing good with like 5. Actually, we were good with 4, but then we found a stray who was like laying in the middle of the road.
Oh.
So we, you know, we can't just leave a kitten sleeping in the middle of the road. So we took that one in. And then we were good with 5. We're like, we're good with 5. That's all we're doing. And then like 2 months ago, my mom, who lives along a river, like she just had a stray show up with like a fish hook in its mouth.
Oh my God.
So they took her to the vet and they got her adopted. And then like 2 or 3 days later, here's a bunch of kittens.
Oh.
The vet never told anyone that, oh, this cat just recently gave birth. You might want to be on the lookout.
Wow.
Like no kind of head up or anything. So they found homes for a couple of them. My wife and I were going to take one of them. And then it turned into we're going to take one and then foster a second one for one of my wife's coworkers who changed her mind. So, okay, we have 2. And then my mom was like, well, I have to deal with the dog and I'm going on vacation. So could you just watch this one for like, you know, get it litter trained and, you know, like 2 or 3 weeks and then I'll take this one. She changed her mind.
Wow.
So 3 new kittens in our household bring us up to 8 cats. And my legacy as a crazy cat lady has been cemented.
So, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
They're adorable. They're adorable, except for all the scratch marks on my arms.
Yeah.
It's like, do you have depression issues? No, I just have kittens. So N, the original N was a browser game, right?
Actually, sort of, it was made in Flash, but it wouldn't run very well in the browser, so we released...
The physics were really pushing the limits.
Yeah, we barely got 40 frames per second out of it in standalone mode, and in browser it just was garbage.
Oh,
so
wow.
We released it standalone. However, people then hacked it and extracted the game part, and that is how a lot, like, it's spread on, like, addicting games and whatever all those websites are. So a lot of people have played the Flash, like, the browser version.
It
but
didn't run very well.
No,
though.
It's kind of embarrassing. Like, it just really, it wasn't solid feeling. But we, like, we actually released a new free version that we rewrote from scratch in, like, 2010. Specifically so that there's a version that runs in your browser that doesn't suck. So.
Nice. Then with N Plus, you went with the Xbox 360, and then there were also PSP and 3DS, or not 3DS, but just DS versions, right?
Yep.
And then with N Plus Plus, you went with PS4.
Yeah.
Are you trying to make people buy every bit of hardware possible?
We were more thinking of it like, how can we bring this game to different audiences? Because there isn't a lot of crossover between platforms generally, so we wanted to reach them somehow, and it hasn't really, I mean, it's worked in a sense that there are players on each of those platforms, but there's also been a lot of, you know, like when N Plus came out, people were wondering why it didn't come out for PS3 or for PC or whatever, but the answer was really just that we didn't, you know, we're a teeny little team that doesn't have unlimited resources. We would have loved to, but it just wasn't possible, so we've kind of had to do it in a more scattered approach and over years reach every platform. But anyway, with N++, we're trying to, we'd love to be able to port it to as many platforms as we can, but it's still a matter of resources. So
yeah, well, that started on PS4 and now it's on Steam as well. Yeah. Are there any active plans to bring it to Xbox One? But I'll admit, I am one of the very, very sad Xbox owners who just really, really wishes N++ was on my system.
Well, I mean, we would definitely love to bring it to Xbox One. That is, it's a goal, but we just need to hopefully sell it.
Not lose money.
Yeah.
Right now we're still, we haven't yet broken even because development went 2 times over budget in terms of money as well as time.
Oh,
so
wow.
We're still kind of digging ourselves out of the hole, but we really do want to bring it to Xbox, because certainly there are tons of fans from N Plus on the 360 that we know are kind of unhappy that there's no N Plus Plus on Xbox. So it's definitely a goal. Like
it would definitely make us happy to make them happy, so we're going to try.
And it would make me happy for you guys to be happy about making us happy.
Well, thank you.
Everyone wins.
I know the N Plus is playable on the Xbox One through the backward compatibility program. Have you guys seen a bump in sales at all when that first became part of the backward compatible program?
Not really. I think it may have simply been disguised by the fact that they sunsetted the 360.
So they both kind of cancel each other.
Yeah, because like our sales reports don't, as far as I can tell, don't specify where someone bought it. On 360 or on Xbox One. So we haven't, I mean, it's just the same sort of slowly decreasing tail that we've always seen since it launched in 2008. Haven't really seen any bumps one way or another. So I'm guessing, like, what happened is that the, you know, the new Xbox One people kind of replaced whatever we lost when people stopped buying 360s.
Yeah. I just wasn't sure if there was any kind of bump, because I know like Black Ops and Red Dead, when those became backward compatible, they had spikes in their sales. I wasn't sure. I know N Plus was part, was that part of the original like 100-some games?
Yep.
So I'm wondering if that was a reason it didn't have any kind of big spike or bump, because it was just lost in the crowd.
Yeah, it's possible.
Definitely possible.
But at least it's out there for the people who have Xbox Ones and can't play N++. They could play N+, which is, you know, it's a plus short, but it's still good.
Yeah, it's still good.
It's good, but N++ is so much better. It's just
It is just ridiculously good.
Thank you. It's really like, it's honestly just, I think if you took anyone, any game developer who cares about what they're doing and had them make a game, and then sit on it for 8 years, they'll know after, like, they'll have learned and grown so much in that time, and also just have a better perspective that they can see exactly what they did wrong. And so it just kind of bugged us, because we knew there was a better version of the game possible. You know, like, it's like we always had this idea of what we were trying to make, and it's just that each time we made a version, it was the best thing we could make at that time, but it maybe fell short of this ideal we were striving towards. This time, I mean, nothing's perfect, but we got as close to the asymptote as we could. Like, it's definitely diminishing returns. And when something's like 99.9% perfect, getting it to 99.99% is often like it's better to just be satisfied with 99.9. And this is something we tried to build into the game itself, because there's so many challenges and some of the gold is so hard. It's really more the experience of like coming up to your limits and overcoming them, but then at a certain point having to admit that you're not omnipotent. You can't do everything, and you have to kind of be comfortable with who you are and what you can do.
So you could say that the game kind of mirrors development of the game, too.
Yeah. It's an art game, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
So you said that you're sitting at like 99.9% perfect. What is that last 0.1%? What else could you have done?
I would say 99% perfect. I mean, there's just obvious stuff, like everyone wants online multiplayer, which we just, like, we had to make a choice, global level sharing cross-platform or online multiplayer, and we felt like that's such a core part of what N is for so many fans.
The level sharing?
Yeah, the level sharing aspect. We just felt like it's such a big part of the game, we think. And I mean, it's also part of, like, how we design the game. Is just so it's like Mario Maker, actually. You know, it's like in Mario, you couldn't just put any object anywhere before. It would break. But with Mario Maker, they sort of made it really robust. And so from the start, we always try to make our engine really robust so that you could put sort of any object anywhere. And that's an important thing when you're trying to give the public at large the level editor. So I don't know. This is a very long way of saying online multiplayer would have been great, but it had to be cut. Unfortunately. So that's definitely, I'd say 99%. I don't think we're at 0.9, but.
And obviously there are still a few little bugs and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we certainly have.
Oh, that's unacceptable.
We've got a long list of things we would like to do. And it's just sort of a matter of what can we afford to do, both in terms of time and money.
Yeah.
Is online multiplayer something that's still being considered, or is that kind of written off for N++?
It's being considered. It's very expensive.
Yeah, it's kind of like if somehow our launch had like gone gangbusters, then if we ever like make Meat Boy money, it will definitely have online multiplayer. Like that's for sure that will happen. But at the moment, unfortunately, it's like people just don't really realize how expensive and how long it's just how much effort goes into it. To like that one little feature that to them is just a little bullet point, but that's like probably an entire year of someone's life, if not several people's lives.
In terms of programmers, designers.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly it's just a line of code that's like online toggle on.
I've seen that comment. It's like, why don't you just enable multiplayer in Unity? You know, just click the, it's multiplayer button. Definitely a bit.
It's that easy.
Yeah.
Click a button and it's done. So why did you not click that button?
Well, first of all, it's not made in Unity, so it's a lot harder.
Oh, like, son of a bitch.
You gotta make the button first, and that's a big job.
But yeah, it was really just like, in terms of how much resources it was going to take, the global level sharing and the online multiplayer both, when we were planning it, seemed like they would take the same amount of time and money, and we just made a judgment call that the value of what we were creating would be maximized for the greatest number of people with the level sharing rather than the online. Because our experience with online is, especially for a Twitch game, it just does not work. Like, everyone has like, oh, what about Street Fighter? What about like this 3D game? Nothing like a side view 2D platformer where you have perfect vision of exactly where you are and you can see any, like, it's just,
and there's no animations, anything is hidden behind.
Yeah, there's no way to hide latency in the game. And it's just, people don't really understand that it just really does not, you can't get it perfect. And we wanted this game to be solid. We didn't want to add something to the game that wasn't as good as all the rest of the stuff we put in. And so to do it right is just, it's like, that's a fantastically hard engineering problem. And, where was I going with this? What was the original question? God.
I don't remember. We just talk on the show.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, anyways, it's, Oh, yeah, I remember. So it's like, so not only is it this huge, incredibly hard problem, it's also, especially for indie games, especially for like games like ours that aren't super mainstream, it's like 1 or 2 months after the game launches, it's a ghost town. No one's using the online multiplayer. So it's essentially, from the point of view of everyone who has bought the game, a waste. And whereas with the level sharing, once you make a level, everyone else in the world can play it forever, which we thought is just obviously a bigger win. And also, we just love our community. Like, we really are inspired when we see the stuff that gets made, just because they come from so many different angles. They've developed so many ideas that we never even thought of.
Oh, yeah, it's
just
amazing.
It's like we really get a lot out of the level sharing, too, just in terms of how satisfying it is to see people engage with it like that.
I have seen a ridiculous number of crazy stages on there. When I first went to the browsing the levels, the newest levels and the top levels, two caught my eye. One was a gigantic maze of, it looked like the thumbnail of it just looked like a white square. It was just tight corridors, gigantic maze, hitting switches, backtracking. It was insane. I think I spent like 3 or 4 minutes running through it and I still ran out of time.
Wow.
And then I saw one that just said fuck.
Yeah.
Well, that'll get taken down eventually.
Well, it might not, actually. We don't really police.
Yeah, if enough people flag it, we'll take it down.
Yeah. But we get rid of some stuff, but generally
that's on the borderline of is it truly offensive?
Yeah.
Is there a flagging option in there? Because I didn't see one when I was going through the newest releases. I didn't see an option to flag anything. I don't know if I just overlooked it.
Yeah, if you pull up the social panel, it's like, you know, there's the color chooser on the left side?
Yeah.
There's a social panel on the right side, and it lets you, like, follow a level creator, and one of the options is flag the level, like, report it.
All right. Yeah, I guess I just completely overlooked that the first time around, so.
There is the UI is definitely intimidating because there's just so many options. We tried to do a good job of presenting it in a way that is the least intimidating we could, but at the end of the day, we wanted to provide, 20 or whatever features. And so you have to, you have to put 20 features in front of someone and hope that people, I mean, I'm sure you would have come across it eventually.
But yeah, it's definitely difficult because presenting that much information clearly and so that it's easy to see and understand is really, I mean, it's a challenge for any game, but especially one where the focus is minimalism and we're trying to keep the aesthetic really clean. You end up having to cut features instead of, solving complex UI problems.
So what are some of the craziest levels you've seen in the game that people have made that have just completely surprised you or floored you or threw in mechanics you didn't even think of?
Two spring to mind. One is just this little level that shows off a little glitch. Every time we release one of these things, we think we've fixed all of the little weird, quirky physics glitches, but people immediately find them and then start using them. And actually, there are a bunch of things in N++ that started out as bugs, but then the community in N liked them so much, like just certain kinds of weird jumps that we actually kind of did a better job of making them part of the game and not bugs. But the new wave of bugs has happened. And so the one that I'm thinking of is, those like bouncy blocks?
Yeah.
They're called bounce blocks. Yeah, we're good at naming things.
Good name. And, yeah.
You can actually, if you get the angle and the timing right, you can jump up into one so that you hit the bottom corner of it and then jump off to launch off of it. And so someone made a level where you essentially had to do that. It's like just a diagonal line of them, and you have to climb your way up to the exit using nothing but these almost impossible, you have to have frame perfect timing, just like several of these jumps in a row. And yeah, that was pretty mind-blowing when we saw
good
it.
Good lord.
And then the classic thing is the DDA level, don't do anything.
These are my favorites too.
Yeah, like that. I don't know, like some of them got shared on social media or whatever. It's kind of like, if you haven't seen them, it's just, you don't press anything, you hit start, and then the ninja gets bounced around by a variety of hazards and stuff, and automatically dodges swarms of enemies in this really amazing way. The best one I've seen, which is just incredible, is it's a rocket follows you through the entire level.
That's so good.
For like 2 or 3 minutes.
Wow.
It's on your tail. You're doing all kinds of stuff. You're going through all these really twisty corridors and staying alive. Then in a tour de force, there's a part where you're chasing it, because if you get directly behind a rocket, it will travel straight because it doesn't know whether to turn left or right. Because
it's like it's little AI.
Yeah, it can't make up its mind, so it just goes straight. And so they got it to do that. So the ninja chases it for a while. Then the ninja actually dances in circles around the rocket, just using the jump pads, which are things that kind of just shove the ninja. It's really nutty. We knew about DDAs for like a decade, but we had never imagined that you could actually do that. And it's really, really cool. I think it's somewhere in the feature tab if you want to find it.
But the other thing about them, aside from the fact that people have made levels that are so complex and that are, you know, so many interesting things happen within, is that you have to make them like a moment at a time and then test it and then add a little thing and then test it. Like the complicated process of actually making the level must be insane.
Yeah.
I don't even know how long that takes or how you even get started. It's crazy. It's amazing.
Yeah, that actually is almost more amazing. Just knowing how long it takes to make a level for us.
A simple, normal level.
Yeah, these things just must take hours and hours and hours, which is amazing.
It's exceptional.
I can't imagine the time investment it would take to make a DDA level.
Yeah.
Like, they're fun as hell to watch, but, you know, the 2 minutes it takes to watch one, that had to take them months to plan.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous how intense some of those are. And I have not seen the one you're talking about, and I'm going to have to look it up after this interview, because that sounds insane.
So
yeah,
good.
It's awesome.
Do you know the name of it, or is it just in the featured?
It's definitely in the featured, and it definitely has DDA in the title of it, but beyond, there's like 2 or 3 DDAs in the featured section, so...
So just watch them all, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck it, you got time. Watch them all. What are some of the most offensive levels you've seen in the game? I'm going to imagine you've seen plenty of dicks made in the game, right?
Actually, our community is surprisingly great for that. Like, there's always one or two people, but I don't really remember. I don't actually know if we've seen a dick in N++. We definitely made one when we were testing the flagging and stuff. But
that makes me so happy to hear.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen one in the wild, which is really nice.
Yeah, we have N version 2 has a lot more of them, I think. But N++, yeah, it's
great.
Pretty okay so far.
There's definitely like swearing in some of the level names, or some of the tiles definitely spell out rude words, but you know.
Yeah, we're all right with that.
Those are the emotions you go through when you play this game. So
yeah.
you have to be able to let that out.
It's natural.
I don't know if I'm proud of the community for not making any dick levels, or if I'm disappointed in them for not making any dick levels.
Well, hopefully it will get more popular, because I think the more people playing it, the likelier it is that there will be more dick levels.
Yeah,
so.
Statistically.
Yeah.
It'll happen. I believe in it. And the fact that you guys already made one yourselves, just, I'm so happy to hear that you made one in testing.
Well, it seemed like the classic thing of, we had to test banning a level.
Yeah, true. I mean, this show taught me the TTP acronym for developers, so I'm just thrilled every time I get to ask about the TTP of a level. What's the time to penis for your game?
Time to create.
Okay. Yeah. I think Mike Micah of iDarb is the one who told us that acronym, and that they were like, yeah, what's the TTP on your level? Oh, it was like, Two weeks and we had someone make dicks in iDarb. I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. So
I prefer TTT, time to tears.
Just sadness that people are using your game to make dicks.
Oh, no, I just meant more like when you hit a level you can't beat.
Oh, that's even better. Hey, it works both ways, right?
Yeah.
So this is a question I don't normally ask on this show, because I like to think that we're more casual than this, but one of my listeners wanted me to ask the question I have always vowed never to ask. what games were your inspiration in creating N++?
Oh, wow. Oh. You vowed never to ask that.
That's
one.
Weird.
I have always told people when I do interviews, like, you know, we're more of a casual, laid back show. We're not going to get into the, what is your inspiration for why you do what you do? But someone wants to know, what was your inspiration?
Easy to answer, but it's going to be hard to answer without getting kind of nerdy because all of the games are like obscure freeware from the early 2000s.
So bring settle it.
On.
It.
Yeah.
Bring but it on.
We actually made a point of, in the credits page of the original N, linking to all the games that we took something from, because we were really inspired by the freeware that we were playing. And like, that's really why we made N, because we were like, these people are all just one or two people, and they're making these awesome games that we like more than console games. So like, why shouldn't we try it? But anyways, so Soul Dot is a freeware game made by a guy who's still making really cool games. His company is called Transhuman Design right now. Mitchell Marcinkowski. Anyways, he made this game called Soul Dot, I think in 1999. And it's like a side view Counter-Strike or sort of side view Call of Duty. It's like a shooter, team-based, capture the flag with kind of realistic gun physics, but it's all 2D and you have jet boots. And that game had a kind of tribesy kind of skiing mechanic. Like they're just, your player had some inertia and momentum. And so that was the idea we took from that game is like, oh, cool. Like when your player has inertia, it actually, that can create sort of interesting situations that you don't get in a more straightforward kind of side view movement system. The next inspiration was Super Bubble Blob, which is a click and play game made by K&P Master. And it's like a one screen puzzle platformer, but it's way more puzzly. And the main thing about that game is that you're a little blob and you can slide down walls and also jump up walls. So like the way that wall sliding and wall jumping works in N definitely feels very different than Super Bubble Blob, but that was the game that gave us the idea that it could be cool to add that kind of stuff in a platformer. Also, just because we've always hated ladders in platformers, they're just so awkward and, you know, it's like, it's not very elegant. They're such a kludge. And the wall jumping and wall sliding really helped. Like a lot of games have wall jumping, but they don't let you jump up the same wall. And it's so irritating. When we added the wall jumping that was inspired by Super Bubble Blob, where you can just jump up one wall, it was just like, this is what everyone should be using instead of ladders. It's just obviously a more natural solution to that sort of problem in platformers. Anyways.
Yeah.
The third one is Puchiwara no Boken, which is, sorry, let's have Mirjet.
No.
Okay, anyways. my Japanese pronunciation is horrible. I'm sorry. It's a Japanese freeware game from early 2000s where you're a tiny little stick figure in a very big, like, zoomed out world. And so that was really just the framing of the game. The way that the zoomed out view made it feel, it just gave this awesome sense of space and also way more room to work with in terms of level design possibilities. Like single screen Mario wouldn't work because of how big Mario is. You just don't have a lot of stuff to work with. But this zoomed out thing really inspired us.
And like Load Runner for like the black and white Load Runner is like that too.
Yes, definitely like a lot of old games were inspirations. I guess we should mention them too. But the last one, Zone Runner, I think it's another, actually I think it's Game Maker. I'm not sure. But anyways, it was this cool game. It's because it's this very simple platformer where all you do is run around and collect gold coins. And our inspiration from there was really just, hey, you don't need anything else. Like if the game is fun, running around and collecting coins and just living to the end of the level is completely sufficient in terms of engaging people. And also one of the enemies in that game was a big spiky bomb that I think we probably were inspired when we made our little spiky mines. Cause there's like that idea of it's a weird, it's not an anachronism, but it doesn't really fit because the visual style of it is like a naval mine, you know, anyways, if you don't think about it too much, it definitely works cause you understand what it is. But yeah, like Mara was saying, Pac-Man, Mario, Tetris, Load Runner. I mean, maybe not directly Tetris, but.
The idea behind it.
The way it's so simple and beautiful. Kirby, like all the classic 2D games were really inspiring too.
And then there was a dose of parkour and Aeon Flux.
Yeah, that was kind of like...
Oh, Aeon Flux was so good.
I think certainly, like, one thing that I think Aeon Flux may have inspired the "you don't have any lives" thing is, I like, definitely we were talking about it, and I remember we read an article about how, why do games have lives, that it's based on arcade game design, it has no place, and we were like, yeah, that's right. But I think it was also a bit of Aeon Flux, because it's just like, I really loved that aspect of it, that she died in some of the episodes, and it just, it's so, that's so cool and interesting to me, just because it eliminates the assumption that your hero is gonna survive, which is, you know, it, I don't know, I just found that to be, like, fantastically cool that Peter Chung did that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, just, yeah, like, the parkour and the acrobaticness in Aeon Flux, like, we were actually, we've tried to make games that are much more like Aeon Flux in terms of the sort of acrobatics you can do, like grappling hook stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and also, yeah, parkour was just, like, really cool. I think we just found out about it. You know, it was like that's like an early 2000s thing. So it was the zeitgeist.
Yeah,
however you pronounce that.
I think he said it right. That's a big word. I don't think we've ever used zeitgeist on this show before. So you're breaking ground on this show.
All right. Nice. It's only two syllables.
Hey, that's a tough one to spell, though.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of EIs going on in that.
Yes, I before E problems.
Yeah, we don't have time for that on this show. Like, we just stick to things like cursing. It's just easier for us.
Well, everyone, it's the language everyone speaks, so. Unlike German.
Speaking of cursing, I'm guessing that you've demoed this game at trade shows multiple times. What are some of the most inventive curses that you've heard people say in regards to dying in your game?
Ooh, boy, yeah. There's certainly been a lot over the years.
I don't know. I don't remember any specific words, but I remember one player who, like, really was projecting, where they kind of were yelling at the ninja as if it was an entity detached from the player, and was just constantly berating it for, like, what it was doing wrong. Like, why would you jump like that? What were you thinking? Like, can't you see the enemy comes? I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
That's one that sticks out for me.
I like it when people are determined not to actually swear, so they say whatever word comes to mind that starts with whatever letter they were trying to not swear. So, for example, if they wanted to say shit, then they would exclaim, like, I don't even know.
Sugar?
Superheroes!
Okay. Sugar puffs.
And shark sandwich is pretty good.
Yeah.
Shark sandwich.
There was one on, like, I think at PAX when we were there, that someone shouted something really funny, like, oh, I think they said horse lampshade, and I was like, that is amazing. What a good combination of words.
What the fuck is horse lampshade?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I gotta name this episode horse lampshade. I'm gonna write that down. That is ridiculous. Oh, my Lord. Oh, man. So what games are you guys playing? When you're not developing your levels or polishing your levels or, you know, not coding online, what games are you playing in your spare time?
Well, let's see. I mean, right now I'm playing Alone With You, which is a game made by Ben Rivers, who's another Toronto developer. It just came out for PS4 and Vita. But I'm also playing Attack of the Friday Monsters, which is by Level 5 on 3DS, because I haven't played that before, and I like Level 5's games generally, so I thought I would check it out. But I only just started that one, so. But we play a lot of things. Like, we try to keep up with what's going on in the game industry.
We definitely haven't kept up with AAA well, but
There's only so much time.
Yeah, and also we don't really enjoy that kind of thing so much. But, like, Hyper Light Drifter is, like, I can't even remember the last time I liked a game this much, like, since Spelunky. It's just so, I just love, everything about it is so, you can just tell that people who knew what they were doing and cared made it, which I think is really rare in indie games, unfortunately, because it's hard. It's hard to get, it's hard to have those two things, experience and passion. Anyways, Hyper Life Drifter is amazing. Imbroglio on iOS is totally fantastic. Michael Bro, who, he made 868 Hack and, he's just really great at, I was going to say he's a genius, but I feel like he's actually made a bunch of posts about how he's not a genius. He's definitely very smart, but it's that he works really hard and he thinks he's very thoughtful. And so I think it does kind of undercut the effort that people put in to just be like, oh, he's a genius or whatever. But anyways, Imbroglio is amazing, on iOS. It's the most minimal kind of actual roguelike experience, not what people call roguelike these days, that is just sort of, it's like roguelike-like, but actually a roguelike sort of distilled into this pure minimal form. It's like so many smart ideas, the whole thing. And he's written this series of blog posts going through the design of the game and all of the things he considered that, again, it's just great. It's really great.
I'll have to look that one up. You said Imbroglio?
Imbroglio.
I will have to look that one up for sure.
Yeah. Wait, 868 Hack is also, it's like maybe a bit more accessible, but it's the same general, they're very different games, but it's the same kind of, it's sort of like he's a musician that has, has a voice. So you can tell that they're made by the same person, even though they both are very different in pretty much every way, which I think is I even think that is just super cool.
Oh yeah.
It's very rare in games for you to really feel someone's voice that way. I don't know. But other than Hyper Light Drifter and Broglio, we haven't had a lot of time. We got Sheeran, the new Sheeran the Wanderer, but we haven't put a lot of time into it yet. Dark Souls 3,
I am not shocked to hear Dark Souls mentioned.
Yeah. Haven't beaten the last boss, and we never finished Dark Souls 1. We made it just past Ornstein and Smaug, or however you pronounce that, and it's just those giant archers were such bullshit that it just kind of... it soured things, and we kind of took some time off, and then, that was the third time we'd restarted Dark Souls, because it's like every time you stop playing for a month or two, you're like, what the hell was I doing? I don't know, at least we... we definitely... We beat Demon Souls, a lot. that was really... I think it was we had a lot more free time when Demon Souls came out than these days.
Yeah.
So I gotta know, because pretty much every developer we talk to mentions Dark Souls as games that they're playing. What is the allure with Dark Souls as a game developer?
I think it's seeing someone do something that's so outside the mainstream at a mainstream scale. Now it's not. Now they know it works, so they're just, trying to make more product. But I think that it still has that thing. I don't know why no one else is doing it. They definitely, I know they have, decades of experience because they made Kingsfield or whatever before Demon's Souls. But I think it's just, the boldness.
It was pretty different when it came out.
Yeah, it was. It's just so, you have to respect. It's amazing. A big studio. It's easy for indies to be bold because the cost, the relative cost is maybe even higher. But it's just when you have a team of, dozens of people, that your monthly burn rate is not insignificant. And so being able to take the time that I'm sure they had to spend to iterate on everything to the point where it all worked and clicked is just it's something that so few big developers do because they know that they can put in half the effort and get 90% of the sales or whatever. So they just don't care. But it was awesome to see something that clearly was a work of, it was just like an indie game. It was made for a reason by people that believed in what they were doing, which I just, it's hard not to respond to that. But also just the way that it harkened back to old games, where it's like, this is the game system and you're on your own. It's like you have to learn, you have to figure out how to deal with stuff. We're not going to tell you what to do, which I think is just it's something that games have lost. Again, indies are bringing it back, but it's something, it's like that's a core part of being human is like being curious and wanting to play. And when you're like looking at them, like I remember Mare was playing a Zelda game a year or two ago and just gave up because every time she found a 5 rupee, it would be like, you got 5 rupees. And it's just like, so I don't want to, like, it's literally half your time is spent waiting for some animation to finish. Are you even playing a game? Like, what activity are you engaged in? It's, I don't know. It's just, anyway, Dark Souls is just like a breath of fresh air, really. But also, it's a really enjoyable game. It's the, it's like, I think it's the same thing that draws people to N, in that the more you play it, the better it gets, which unlocks more content, which is more challenging, and then you keep getting better. It's just, it's the idea, like, you can feel yourself getting better, and you know when you progress, it's not because there was a microtransaction where you upgraded something by paying money. It's just you purely, your brain, you the human, leveled up. And
we just find that really satisfying in games.
Yeah, it's like, that's the real magic of games, yeah. I think, you know? That is just totally lost, like, I don't know.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned how the Zelda games just seem to be getting crappier with, you know, hour-long tutorials and, you know, every chest you open needs to have a long, drawn-out sequence and a slow-scrolling text box. It's like, you found a map.
Or even, like, if by the 90th key I've collected, I'm not aware that keys open doors.
Yeah, no shit.
You know, like, it's weird. But actually, I kind of like that Nintendo have done that, because it let Hyper Light Drifter be such a revelation. Because it's like, I mean, I don't actually know, I haven't actually read anything about the development of the game, but when I was playing, I was like, it's like someone looked at the original Zelda and said, what if Nintendo hadn't forgotten how amazing this design was? Like, how amazing it is to plop someone down in a world with not really a lot of language, but just some consistent rules, and let them explore. I mean, I guess it's the same with Dark Souls. Just the feeling of exploration, of learning things, of revealing things, that sort of delight is just really hard to do if you're committed to making sure everyone can play through the entire game and everyone sees everything. And I think that it's like Hyper Light Drifter just took this huge risk of half the game is hidden. We're never going to even mention, like, the most interesting half of the game. Because if we do, it completely ruins it. And I don't know, it's super cool to see people making kind of bold design decisions like that.
Well, if anyone in our audience is interested in hearing more about Hyper Light Drifter, feel free to check out episode number 208 of the SML podcast.
Oh, cool.
Where Alex Preston of Heart Machine joined us to talk about the game.
Yes, I will absolutely be checking that out.
See, you're in good company coming on a show that Hyper Light Drifter was featured on.
Yeah.
Good company.
It's good. I think it's just that so often, like, there have been, like, when I saw that game, I completely dismissed it out of hand until I played it a few weeks ago. Because it just seemed like every other big, it's so hyped because it looks so nice, right? It's like, it looks so nice. And there's so many games where it's like, there's all this hype generated from, you know, the look of it, or, you know, something sort of marketing-y, and they never have any substance to them. They never have any thought put into the design. You know, like, the core of the game is just kind of this sterile, lifeless husk that they've added all kinds of wonderful audio visual stimulus onto, but in the end, it's kind of like, I'll listen to a cool album and check out some cool visual artists. I want to play a game. I want to play something that someone, anyways, I enough of that rant, but just, yes, it's not specific to Hyper Light Drifter. There are plenty of amazing indie games. It's just that's the most recent one. And it's just like, oh God, it's great. It's just great to know that it's like Spelunky. It's like just the fact, it's proof that you can go back to like the early 90s before 3D happened and stuff got really gross commercially. And just, you can take those ideas and keep following them. And they're just the tips of icebergs that no one has yet to uncover. And I don't know, it's just really heartening for us, because that's what we're interested in, really, is like, game design, pure game design.
Oh, I hear you. If you're looking for another good Zelda-style game, One of the games I've been putting a lot of time into lately is called Stories of Bethem Full Moon. We're going to be, depending on when this episode goes up, I think we already reviewed it, or I'm reviewing it earlier in this show. I don't know.
Okay.
That's the fun of recording stuff out of order.
Yeah.
But it feels like an old Super Nintendo Zelda game. Just a big, beautiful, bright open world, top-down perspective, and it doesn't hold your hand at all.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah, no, we hadn't heard of that at all.
Sounds great.
It came out in December on Steam, and then it's coming out this week on Xbox One, and I think I've already put like over 10 hours into it, and I'm like 40% through the game. So it's big. There's a lot to do, and I'm having a blast with it. So if you enjoy the classic Zelda games, feel free to check that one out too.
Cool.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. A lot of good games coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Including N++.
Thanks.
See, bringing it full circle back to N++. So what are the plans for MetaNet from here on? Is it just focus on the Steam version of the game, focus on getting new levels out there?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have a couple of updates planned for the Steam version, and yeah, we're going to figure out how to deliver the levels and when and all that stuff.
There's other new content.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of other new things that we would really like to add also. So that'll be coming, which is exciting.
Then we have a bunch of prototypes that we're working on, and like a couple new things that we want to start once the bugs are kind of fixed and some of the updates are rolled out. But we don't have any like really solid. Like really, we kind of need to take a bit of a break because it's just working on N++ for like now it's 4 years. Has been pretty tiring.
Yeah, so. I think we're excited about just kind of getting back to doing small experiments and playing around with small ideas and just seeing how they come together, or
maybe they
won't, who knows. But we're excited to not really have a big project planned so that we have that freedom.
So I'm guessing N++++ is not in the future.
Never.
No, we're never making it. Like the whole mission statement of N++ was that we would make something as close to perfect. It's just like something where we wouldn't feel tempted like we were this time to go back and fix all the mistakes.
Or try to top
it. Yeah, something that we felt like we couldn't significantly improve on, which I do think we succeeded at.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad because like we just had to get it out of our system. We're like, we do like we still really love playing it and it's still awesome, but we also just have always felt a bit like operating in the shadow of N, because it's this thing. It's like especially with N+, where we knew, or just all, you know, it's like there are all these things we wanted to do. Now that we've finally done them, it's kind of a weight off our shoulders.
Yeah.
I'll keep my fingers crossed that N++ comes to Xbox, though. I'm hoping that you don't step away from the series before it comes to Xbox.
No, I mean, we definitely, it's like, honestly, it's purely if the expected sales will cover the cost of porting it, then we will do it. No question. Like, we just want to break even, because then we'll have gotten a lot more people to play the game and a lot more people can enjoy the game. Mm-hmm. So that's really, it's just, we really just want people to play our games.
Because
it's so awesome. So, like, that's, and I mean, it's, we just don't want to say for sure, because at this point we're not sure, but it's definitely on our list of things we would really like to happen.
Yep.
Same here. Hey, I got to ask. We're an Xbox focused show, so I've got to ask, and I've got to pressure, and I've got to beg and cry and do whatever I can.
No worries.
You'll probably understand.
Oh man, it's good stuff though. I'm thrilled that you guys came on the show. It's been a great chatting with you. I know it's been an hour. I don't want to take up too much of your day. Is there anything else that you two want to talk about with the game or with anything else?
I can't think of anything.
Yeah, neither can I. I think you answered. I mean, you asked some good questions, and hopefully we answered them okay.
Yeah. Actually,
I hope I asked some decent questions at least. I'm trying. Yeah, I'm making an effort.
Yeah.
I was just on the worst podcast we've ever done last night, so...
You don't have to say that about my show while I'm here.
No.
Trust me, it was, like, I don't want to get into it, but anyways, no, this has been great.
Please do get into it. I want to hear about this terrible show.
one thing that I guess we should mention is just that, just for the record, N inspired Meat Boy. Because Northern Lion made a video...
This is not
a video of N++ where a homing rocket killed him, and he's like, "Oh, it's a homing rocket from Super Meat Boy," and we're like, "It just really hurts us to think that for the vast majority of gamers, they think that the stuff in Meat Boy was invented by Meat Boy, like, which is not to say Meat Boy is not a good game. It's a great game. Like, the amount of love and polish and, like, it's just really cool. It's just that it's, you know."
Was inspired.
Yeah, it was. We just want people to understand who the original is, really.
Yeah,
that's definitely. All.
Yeah, Meat Boy was not the innovator of the world. Like, other games came before Meat Boy.
It is true.
But that Danny B soundtrack in Meat Boy cannot be messed with. That soundtrack is so good.
Wasn't it just messed with?
Technically, yeah, but I don't like to acknowledge that other version of the game.
Yes.
Yeah. I got it free with PlayStation Plus, and I still won't play it because it just doesn't feel right without Danny B's music.
Huh.
It's just, that music, it's so iconic to the game, but... well, Danny B's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy. We've met him a couple times at GDC.
So what is next with MetaNet? Are you guys going to be doing PAX this year? Are you guys going to be doing any shows this year, going to MAGFest in January?
I don't think so. We're going to be in Tokyo for Tokyo Game Show, but it's kind of a vacation. It's like a working vacation. But
yeah,
I think we don't have any plans. We kind of like we did in 2014. We basically every month or two did another show, and we just got really, we're just really exhausted still from that. It's like, it's so awesome. It's so inspiring to actually see people play this thing that you've been working on sort of in isolation.
Yeah.
But we really just need to rest for a bit at the moment because we definitely have just put in a lot of effort.
Yeah.
In hindsight, we probably should have not made 4,000 levels and maybe 2,000 or 3,000 would have been okay, but...
Well, we'll know for next time.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine creating that many levels.
Well...
It took a lot of time.
It's a lifestyle.
I can imagine 8 years is a long time to make 4,000 levels.
Yeah.
That's... Wow.
I mean, we didn't really start making levels until, like... 2010 to 2012, so
really it's only
4 or 6, but then there's two of us, so that, you know, that also lightens it. I'd say, like, I don't think we've even spent half of our time making levels. It's just that if there's one item, like, that is the item that has taken the largest block of time, really.
Yeah,
well, thanks to level creation, you could just outsource that shit for the next game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a suggestion. That's actually something that a lot of fans have said, like, why don't you just let us make the levels? But it's just, like, we have a style that we feel like, you know, that's our, we have, I don't know, it's just, actually, the main thing is that it's fun. We like making levels. Like, it's like sketching, it's like playing on guitar, it's just this fun, creative activity. And I think that if it wasn't that way, we never would have made this many levels.
Oh, yeah.
And, like... That's also why we wouldn't really want to outsource it, because that's kind of like the most enjoyable part for us is like that, the creativity of level design.
That's awesome that you guys just churn out so many levels. I can't imagine.
Well, I wouldn't say churn, really. It takes 3 to 4 hours per level. But
for how many there are, I think churn is a good descriptor for the volume that there are.
Like, the only quibble that I have with it is a lot of people seem to think that the vast number of levels means that they're lower quality and we just, like, whipped them off real fast. But
yeah.
We were pretty tedious about them and made sure that every single thing is perfectly placed and, like, they're really...
Deliberate in the design.
Yeah, it's definitely something that we find a bit frustrating that we struggled with is that, yeah, just like that huge number of levels, people are immediately like, there's a lot of garbage and filler. It's really, like, I'm really glad because there are a few reviews that specifically pointed out we never found a level that felt like it wasn't really paid a lot of loving attention to, so that's good, but...
But, you know,
whatever.
What can you do?
Yeah.
All you could do is just keep putting out awesome stuff. I know in our review, I pretty much called the game a masterpiece. It is,
Thank you. For
a platforming fan, this is like the definitive game that doesn't have the word Mario in the title.
That's super cool to hear. Thank you.
That was definitely what we were trying to do, and that's awesome.
Mission accomplished. So
thanks.
Yay.
At least in my opinion. I know the game didn't perform as you wanted on PlayStation. I hope it does a lot better for you on Steam, and I hope it eventually comes to Xbox. No matter what happens, I am excited to see what MetaNet does next. And if you guys need a vacation, go to MAGFest in January. That's a good party instead of a convention.
Awesome. So. All right. Well, thank you. We'll write that down.
But thank you again for coming on and chatting with us. Do you have any final words to end this show?
It's a lot of pressure. We should probably come up with something good, but...
What was it? Horse lampshade?
Yeah, there we go.
Thank you. Thank you.